You're listening to the New Utah Podcast with your hosts, Bree.
People can say my name and I still don't pay attention.
Chris.
This is what happens when your number one health concern in the state is porn.
Jeremy.
Flicks it and then walks up and just kicks the living crap out of whoever.
Oh, episode 412 of the New Utah Podcast. We're six away from our 418th episode, which means nothing. 416, however, is 8 years, which is what I meant to say. So,
wow, this is a little loud.
I didn't hear. Yeah,
it's just Tool playing over here in the background. It was a little loud for me. So I'm going to start by saying Bree and I are extremely cleanly people. Mm-hmm. We keep a very tidy house.
Not just, I mean, we're not pretty clean. We're not like overly clean, but we're very tidy and organized.
We're not freaks about it. Like, just like everyone else, like over the course of a week, our counter or our kitchen table, because that's where sometimes like mail goes and that's kind of where we set stuff. And like, throughout the week, that might get cluttered, but we try to keep it relatively clean. And every weekend, we make sure everything goes back into its place. But now, with the renovations...
we talked that much about the renovations, really?
A little bit.
You briefly talked about carpet last...
So, today, we had carpet installed in our upstairs bedrooms.
So
all three of them.
Just a super short recap, because since I don't remember what all we've done.
We've talked about
Chantel's moved back in. We knocked the wall between our master bedroom and our other daughter's bedroom out to make a small walk-in closet and turn the other daughter's bedroom into my office so that the daughter that moved back could have her room back. So she's temporarily been living in the other daughter's room. We've not had a closet at all. And my office has been filled with everything, like all of the things, but because of the carpet going in this way. So we got everything done. Like the walls painted, the walls up, all of that.
There's stuff in our garage. There's stuff in our front room. There's stuff in our family room. The podcast studio until about 30 minutes ago was full of clothes. Like you could not get in here. Like all of Bree's three closets worth of clothes, were in here. And we couldn't get in here to do anything. And so following last week's episode, which you should go listen to if you haven't, where we went to Caputo's. Like we had to like set everything back up.
And we have some stuff coming up with Caputo's. So keep listening because it's going to be awesome.
I love that place.
I've had a few technical difficulties, but you, the listener, won't know anything about it. But other than we talked about sleep, but it was such a good episode.
Yeah. So you should go back and listen to that if you haven't, just on another level. Like Caputo's, like I've always liked Caputo's quite a bit. I did not realize all the really cool shit that Caputo's has done. Like
we insure Caputo's.
Like, okay. So just as I'm going to talk about it. When she was talking about the chocolate that they do.
Oh yeah.
From, that the one specific chocolate from, down in Bolivia.
Some tiny, tiny little village.
Yeah. Where basically they got swindled the year after the lady had gone and had done it. Caputo's did not have to do this. Ends up paying for not only the harvest they got swindled out of, but also prepays for the next year's harvest so they can set up all their own equipment to do a lot of the processing and stuff there so they can no longer be swindled by some shitheads down the road. Like, that's fucking super generous. They didn't have to do it.
Yeah, they basically played twice.
And it's 100% just out of pocket. It's just a cost that they paid because they really liked what these people stood for and wanted to support them and wanted to actually give them, you know, a way to support themselves. And so I just thought, like, that's the kind of shit that's why we do this show, right? We talk to small businesses all the time, and it's that kind of stuff that really inspires me.
Well, and the stuff they've done for the Downtown Coalition, because they're right off of Pioneer Park, which over the years have had some homeless issues.
Yeah, like she said, the 4th Street Clinic and what's the name of the other one? Not the clinic, but I can't remember the other organization that's right there, but they donate tons of stuff to them.
The St. Vincent de Paul Center.
Yeah, I mean, they donate tons of stuff to those guys. They try to help them out as much as possible. They're a really good, upstanding part of the community. So anyway,
we insure them.
I just really should go listen to the episode. It's fantastic. I didn't realize all that stuff. But you know, our house is in total fucking disarray. The guest is going to come in. There's still a mattress in our front room, or our family room.
I really, really thought it would be this great idea to do this on a Tuesday because Phoebe goes to school.
Well, I mean, it is because we got it done before the show. Like, it worked, the timing actually worked out pretty damn perfect. Today has been unbelievably stressful between trying to work in the morning and like have a couple meetings in the afternoon, but also like as soon as the carpet people were done, we were like upstairs putting new closet stuff together so we could actually have the closet to get the clothes out of here. And I had one of our other friends come over, Jonathan, who's been on the show a couple times, Jeremy's son, helped us move a lot of stuff down because Jeremy's incapable right now.
I helped a little.
He held the baggie.
I helped the plastic.
But like Jonathan's been a godsend. Like having that extra set of hands was very helpful. But I called John because I'm like, you know what? If I can have someone just come over, there's like seven really awkward and heavy big things that I can't do myself. Like our mattress, the big ass like queen size foldable mattress, the adjustable base bed, the headboard to the bed, the big fucking dresser.
My desk.
The trundle, Breeze desk. Like those are the parts that are like, they take two people.
They're long, or there's something that slides out or something that folds, or.
Yeah, they're very awkward, and there's some of it is somewhat heavy. And so all that stuff got moved. But yeah, it's just been really crazy. And
my daughter has gotten a job. She started a job this week.
Yesterday.
And normally she'd work Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. She'd work 12s, but she's training. So she's working from like 8 to 5. And so she's leaving in the morning and coming home at night and just to like chaos.
But okay. Let me
She's being a pretty good sport.
I love the kid, but holy fuck. Right. So we have to kennel her cat while the people are here because one, they had the door open constantly. That cat is terrified and has only really existed upstairs. Like it has not really ventured downstairs much. Because
I don't think she's terrified. I think she's just like trying to figure it out. There's a big dog, two other cats that hiss at her.
She's like only really been in and out of those three rooms and none of them were accessible for the day. And so like we had to kennel her because otherwise, who knows? Like she could have got out. We can't stick her where the other cats were, which is in the studio. Like they just hang out here all day. We just covered up the cat door and they just didn't.
Once they were in here, I just put a little thing in front of it so that they couldn't accidentally get out.
They just sleep.
They don't care.
They don't give a shit, right?
But they play with our board.
But she
had to kennel her cat before she left because we can't kennel her.
Because she'll just fucking scratch the shit out of us. So as soon as like that room was done, re-vacuumed it, I took her cat tree, her litter box, and her kennel up there and like let her have like quiet free time on her own in that space without any, because the house is noisy and a disaster anyway, like all day, like the banging and hammering and shit of the stuff upstairs. So, but the first thing Sean does when she gets home, did you guys feed my cat? Are you fucking
kidding me? I didn't feed her this morning because I didn't want her to have to go to the bathroom.
Are you fucking kidding me, cat? Like, kid?
No.
Like
we did what we could. Like, I kept her with me in the kennel until right when the carpet people got there, and then I put her in the bathroom and closed the door so that she wouldn't have to deal with them coming in and out and everything. And literally, that is the first, then, like, we vacuumed up the, you know, because you have your carpet installed and there's carpet pieces.
Right.
So I hurried and vacuumed. I vacuumed that room first so that Chris could do all of that before we even started on our closet stuff, which is way more important.
Because we needed to.
Because
do
we
the
knew
studio.
That, like, the cat has been uncomfortable all day.
But then Bree's like, what we really need, Sean, is for you to help. She's like, okay, but I need to feed my cat first. I got to take care of the cat. Like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, the cat's
fine. But to be fair, I have a problem with some clothes. Like, I had three closets, but I didn't really think I had three closets. And I really, really thought it would be really close to fitting, but everything is in the closet. Everything. The problem is, Chris's clothes aren't in the closet. Because my clothes are taking up
again. I've got some ideas,
and I'm grateful for that. But I do need to clean it out. But I had a little panic attack while Chris was gone to pick up the dog from school, realizing that like everything is in there, and there's not any room. And yeah, it's been a day. And my desk. So because they had to move my desk, I moved my office to the dining room table. And so I'm literally sitting on a stool at the dining room table for my desk, which is where it might be until tomorrow afternoon.
I don't think so.
Yeah, there's some things I would rather have in the podcast or in the my office before I put
that's work
together.
Time anyway. If you move your desk during the middle of the day when you're working, that's work time. That's a work activity.
I mean, honestly, I've done stuff at work that moves my desk.
It'd be
so,
the
yeah.
same.
Yeah,
it'd be the same thing in an office setting. So, okay. So that's my woe and why. Like, if I seem off today,
I think you've been doing amazing. We've had one dust up between the two of us.
That's probably,
where we were just not on the same page. And I know some of it was, I mean, I know at least 50% of it was me, but it was, but we recovered.
So how are your,
chicken update?
Yeah, I want to know about these baby giant chickens.
So they have now doubled in size since last week.
But that's not uncommon for chickens, right?
No, chickens grow fast, but they're now as big as the 1 month old chickens.
And they're 2 weeks old?
Uh-huh. Oh yeah, because I forgot you got a few of the little bit older chickens that were at the,
because they're at almost the month mark and nobody wants them for,
yeah. And you could just,
that seems so weird.
Again, they want the baby chicks.
So I couldn't pass it up. So I got four of those thinking, well, if somebody dies, which they typically do,
but also they were at an age where they weren't likely going to die.
Right.
And how many
did they cost anymore?
No, they're less. They're on sale.
No, he's talking about the older chickens.
Yeah, I am.
Yeah, they were cheaper.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
They're on sale because no one wants them.
Yeah.
So because they're past the point where they're going to die.
But they're no longer cute. I mean.
Yeah, but who gives a shit? They actually are in their ugliest fucking stage, by the way, because
early, they're like molting their their fine feathers and putting on real feathers.
You go like baby chicken into like, you know, couple, 2 week to like
it's
2 month old chickens.
Phase.
Yeah.
They're the ugliest fuckers on the planet.
Because the real feathers are coming in.
And they just have that like fluff that's like peeling off.
And yeah,
they're so
bare.
Ugly.
And I'm like,
so ugly. I think the only part where they're uglier is when they're molting, when they're about to die at the end of their life.
Yeah.
When they start losing half their feathers for no reason.
They're pretty nasty. So yeah, the baby chicks, Jersey Giants are now the same size as the month olds.
Oh wow. Yeah, that's
in 2 weeks.
That's crazy. that's crazy stuff right there. We have to come over. You're going to have a barbecue soon, I think you said. So we'll have to come over.
Yeah, the next couple of weeks we're kind of keeping an eye on the weather as soon as we're not going to get snow or rain.
I don't think we're going to get any more snow. I think we're done with snow for the year. For the season. I'm hoping we keep getting more rain. I love the long day of rain yesterday.
It was helpful.
I do need to get out and put my sprinklers in place now.
They weren't able to mow, but that's fine.
Yeah. Well, fuck, I mowed on Sunday last week, and you can't even tell. Like, a week later, and my lawn was like, oh, you should mow me again.
Yeah.
Which I'm totally okay with doing. I'm going to keep mowing, and the clover can keep propagating.
I was going to say, the clover doesn't need to be mowed, but the lawn part of it needs to be mowed.
So, I like
it. And the dandelions.
Yeah, the dandelions.
We don't have bees, so I want
the
dandelions gone.
I can't use dandelion killer.
Did you know that dandelion killer kills clover?
Yeah.
Oh.
You have to get extremely specialized stuff to not kill the clover.
See, and I don't use it anyway because of bees.
Yeah.
But, like, the last few years, like, I have not had hardly any.
I have a bunch. But I'm really excited for the clover. I love it. It looks so good out there. Just need to get it all filled in. I'm going to give it the season to really propagate and be watered properly and see if the seed I put down, early fall or early spring, will take root. And if it doesn't by like fall, I'll go through and till up the spots again that really need it. Cause the stuff that I tilled like hardcore, a lot of it really took off. And so I'll do that again in the fall if, I have some real bare spots still, and hopefully by then I'll have like the back rocks and stuff done. So, you know, the dog run area will be a little bit better spot. Anyway, yeah, I really liked the rain. That was good for a day.
But those for planting, about 2 more weeks, we should be ready for the next round of planting.
Yeah.
Mother's Day is kind of the
last time you want
to
do it.
You want to have everything pretty much in except for tomatoes. Tomatoes need to come a little after that because they're super finicky.
Yeah.
So you got about 2 weeks, give or take, to kind of prep.
A quick cold snap will kill your fucking tomatoes real fast.
Yeah. I've just lost too many tomatoes over the year to where I push in almost June to where I put in my tomatoes. Because it's Utah. We'll have some weird cold spell.
So all it takes one cold snap where it drops below freezing and tomatoes just really struggle.
Don't like it. Everything else
can deal with frost. It's like that's not a big deal, but back. Tomatoes, just a little bit of freeze in there.
So my peas have actually started coming up, and I haven't noticed the potatoes coming up, but the peas are starting to come up, so.
Nice, nice. Red Butte Garden got their concert show.
Yeah, so they've announced their concert series. I put a little link into there. It starts in June, so it's not for a little bit, but tickets honestly sell out pretty quick.
Yeah, they do. They do for sure.
So it's one of those things that if you're a regular or you want to be or you want to check them out, now's kind of the time to start looking at buying tickets. And they've got some really cool bands coming.
Yeah, I was going to pull that list up for you.
I put the list for you to kind of look.
You put a link. I mean, the link doesn't do me any good on paper, so I got to go to the site. Yeah. It's always their Instagram.
Good thing you have a computer
right?
in front of you all the time.
So, I got like, I don't know who some of these fucking people are. Like, what, Burning Sphere and Xavier Rudd, Umphrey's McGee. There's a lot of fucking weird indie artists that they get to these things. Blues Traveler, and JJ Gray.
That'd be a
is
good
July
one.
7th.
I like Blues Traveler.
So that one will sell out quickly because they're, Portugal the Man is July 14th.
Oh, wow.
I like Portugal the Man quite a bit. Let's see. There's, the Revivalists, if you know who they are. Slash, the Serpent Festival. So I don't know. He's come with some other people maybe. Let's see. Melissa Etheridge.
Yeah.
July 29th and Jewel. I would go for Jewel. I don't give a shit about Etheridge.
That'd be a good one.
I like Jewel. Let's see. Charlie Crockett, if you know who that is. Let's see. The Beach Boys, August 18th. That will be a bunch of old ass people.
That would be interesting because, like, I think there's only two originals left.
Yeah, I think so.
So I wonder if it's a bunch of Filipino guys that sound exactly like them.
Oh, speaking of that, there was a baseball game in wherever, what's his name's hometown is?
You're not giving me much to go.
The lead singer of Journey. Can't think of his name. The real one.
Steve Perry.
Yes.
Piece of shit. Fuck you, Steve Perry.
He was at the game and they started playing his song. Wow, so he stood up and started singing. And they ended up playing the whole entire song. And he stood up and sang the whole thing.
Hmm. Yeah. The new guy's better, I think.
Sounds just like
the little Filipino guy. He's not like super young, but he's a lot younger than that band. The last one I recognize with some, there's the Airborne Toxic event on September 5th.
Oh, I love them.
Indigo Girls on September 17th.
Oh, I love them. Good.
So, and there's a bunch of others, but those are the ones that I really would say
I realize, you know, you kind of look at that like, well, that's, you know, June, July, August. Yeah, but
they'll sell out
quick.
It's not a big venue.
No, so. And that's...
Especially some of those bigger ones that, like, play on the radio.
Well, and you could make a whole like day of it. You could go to the museum, which is literally the Natural History Museum, which we've done a whole like whole long ass show on because we went out there for an adventure. That place is awesome. You could go hang out at the Natural History Museum for several hours, and then literally you park there to go to Red Butte Gardens anyway most of the time.
Yeah, it's right there, and there's restaurants up there. There's plenty to do. There's the zoo. I mean, there's plenty to do up there. You could make a day of it easily. But the Red Butte Gardens concert series always sell out, and they're a lot of fun.
Yeah, even the shitty ones do, because people like the weird obscure music. I'm sure there's like.
Well, and the venue is just cool because you're outside, you're right up against the mountains.
Can you still take like your own drinks and stuff too?
I think you can take your own wine. I'm not 100% sure.
I think you can take a cooler. They just have to be able to check and see what's in it. But
I don't know.
I think that that's another reason why it's popular.
They have in the past, but I don't know if they are this year. You'd have to look that up and see. But yeah. Anyway, so if you are interested, that is something you'll want to jump on here pretty soon.
Well, fuck.
It turns out that when I don't look at my emails because I'm trying to work and put my house back together, our guest had messaged us that she had a little emergency and
hopefully her dog's okay.
Yeah, would be unable to come, and so we're gonna get that rescheduled. But we didn't think to look for that email until.
Well, to be fair, it was like 3:20. It happens. Life happens. Shit happens.
But like Chris came down and was like, "Have you heard from our guest?" And then I looked at the email and
normally,
yes, we had.
Normally, like if we. By 3:30, we're probably still good to like scramble to like get content together. We have some stuff kind of in our back pocket a lot of times that we can
just
pull
in
out.
Case. You never know.
You know, stuff that we really enjoy talking about. But you know, the we set aside 1 week a month to do the adventures so that we can really expound upon stuff that we like in Utah. And we try to have guests on regularly because I think that's a big part of the show is being able to interview these amazing people. But since we found out mid-recording, and honestly, even if we would have saw it at 3:30, I don't know that we would fucking do anything different.
But
we probably would have just kept recording. And
no, I'm really excited to talk to her.
So we'll get this one rescheduled.
And she's totally bummed that she had to cancel, but I don't blame her. Her dog's sick.
She has to take her dog to the vet.
Yeah.
It happens.
You know, even if she doesn't end up having to take her dog to the vet, she doesn't really want to leave the dog alone since the dog's been sick. So
I don't blame her. As much shit as I just talked about my daughter and her fucking cat, because I still think that's crazy. Like, that level of, like, we almost forgot to feed fucking Phoebe. She would have been fine. But I fed her, by the way. So
we've actually, like, forgotten to feed her and, like, realized it at 10 and went, we'll just feed her some extra in the morning.
Yeah. That's just, it's fine. They're fine. It's just like if you don't you accidentally forget to eat at the end of the day, like it happens. But anyway, we're all extreme pet lovers here.
Yeah. And we've all had,
all paid thousands and thousands of dollars for pet surgery for eating peach pits and breaking both of your, tearing both your meniscus and your fucking dog knees.
We get it. We've been there. It's all good. But really excited to have her back. So we'll get that one.
Having a fucking grade 5 heart murmur out of nowhere and, you know.
Yeah.
It's, these things happen and it's okay. So instead, I've talked about it a little bit on the show. I've recently transitioned jobs. I still work for my healthcare job. I'm still running all of information systems for that group, but they don't really need me full time. And it was a long decision, but I think it was the right decision. I've moved to a new company, a company called True Golf. And it's a Utah company. And we do some really cool shit. And so we're going to talk about that.
So we're going to kind of go back to our roots when we kind of, I've never been interviewed because I don't have my own company, but like when we interviewed, you know, Josh, when he was doing, being a realtor, when we interviewed Jess about her cakes, when we interviewed Jeremy about being an architect, or Chris at that time was doing his consulting stuff with the POV, I think.
POS.
Or POS, I mean.
The piece of shit.
Yeah.
POS.
Yeah, I don't know. I've done a bunch of stuff.
But yeah, so we're going to find out more about what Chris does. And I know that I know a little more than Jeremy, but I still...
Have we actually done like a regular get to know you interview with one of us, like outside of the job, but like my birthday's July 19th. For those of you that don't know, as if I don't talk about
it. We haven't done that for a while. We should probably the next time do it with Jeremy too, because we haven't done it in a long time. And with the anniversary coming up,
I mean, it's historical data. It's not really going to change, but, my mom and my dad probably hooked up at a Halloween party as my guests. That's my assumption.
Halloween key party.
Found out a couple years ago I was a bastard. Did not know that.
No, you were born in wedlock. You weren't conceived in wedlock.
That's what a bastard
is. A baby out of wedlock is a bastard. I'm a bastard.
A baby born out of wedlock is a bastard.
Whatever. Might as well.
A baby conceived out
of
wedlock.
Come on, he's a bastard. He wants this.
I
want to
be a bastard.
No,
he's
an asshole, not a bastard.
I just shit all over everyone. Is that what you're saying? Because a dick, sometimes you need dicks. Dick's got to fuck the assholes.
What the
Otherwise,
hell?
They just
Where did this show go?
That's Team America, by the way, if you don't know. Very explicit content, but great show.
Fuck yeah.
So Chris was born July 19th, which means he was conceived sometime at the end, sometime when Jeremy
late
was
October.
Being born.
Yeah.
When Jeremy was celebrating his birthday.
Yep. My
Chris's
parents were celebrating
were
Jeremy's birthday.
A little something else.
I mean, Jeremy is a few years older than me, so maybe they were celebrating his birthday.
Maybe.
I don't know how they would know, because I was born in West Texas in a town called Lubbock. I was
born in Pocatello, Idaho. That's a little bit of a distance between the two, but you never know.
I moved to Wyoming in second grade. I lived all over the state. So I went from Lubbock, Texas at the time. I mean, now it's like 250,000 people, I think. At the time, it was about 150,000 probably. So a fairly sizable city, kind of in the middle of nowhere, but it's a city that has city things, you know?
And in second grade, halfway through the year, my mom marries some fucking dude and they move to Wyoming. My mom wanting to get the fuck away from Texas and all of her family because, I don't know, that's how she was, goes to Wyoming with her new husband to a town called Sinclair, Wyoming. And if you
Sinclair is named after the dinosaur gas company.
Yeah, the gas station, they have a refinery there, and that's what the town's named after.
That is what the town is. It's a refinery.
Yeah, basically. Let's see what the population
is. When you drive by Sinclair, it looks like a gas station with a refinery.
So as of the most recent census, just a couple years ago, Sinclair, Wyoming was 369 people. And I'm pretty sure it was probably about that many people when I lived there.
369.
So I went from a regular, like an elementary school that had like two or three first grade classrooms to...
Yeah, so regular school.
Second grade classrooms to one that grades were split. Like
combined, not split.
Yeah, combined. We had it was one building. There was a lunchroom that was also the gym, and on the outside walls were the classrooms, and the grades were combined. And my favorite story of all time, and this really has to do with like people that are ignorant. And ignorant just means you don't know, right? Doesn't mean you're stupid. It means you don't know.
Not ignorant.
Well, no, ignorant how you say it. Ignorant. Anyway, so I came up. This was back in the late 80s, right as Yellowstone had its massive fires, which made national news. Like, it was a big deal. But
I remember that. In fact, not the year it burnt, but because they had most everything closed. The following year we went, so I was supposed to go with my grandparents the year it burnt, but we postponed it. But I remember going through it as it was still smoldering.
Yeah. I mean, you can still see, like, the fire was so hot. There's parts of Yellowstone that... Like, there's shrubbery and stuff, but, like, you can still see the trees that are, like, left over, like, burnt out.
And it got so hot that the sap inside the tree boils and explodes.
Yeah. So, it's kind of cool. You can still see some of that area. Phoebe must have farted. She's got cheese farts. But anyway, so...
Well, she went to school today, so who knows what she's been eating.
That's true. This is, the treats and stuff from activities. And so anyway, so this is right after the fire, or maybe the fire was like currently going on. I don't really remember. I could probably look it up. But anyway, in class, we were watching some news video of the fire, and the teacher was asking the class, you know, what are some of the effects on the wildlife of the fire? And I'm like, well... Those, like buffalo, like you can see their backsides were all burned off, like the hair on their butts. And everyone in the class laughed at me. Because this kid from Texas had no fucking clue what a bison was.
And that they molt.
And that they actually look like that in real life, and the fire had nothing to do with that shit. And the teacher was really nice about it, but holy shit, everyone laughed at me.
But yeah, like, you had, it was first and second grade, third, fourth grade, fifth, sixth grade, right?
Yeah, I think so. And we didn't have, there's no gas station. There's no, like, when we think of gas stations, we think of convenience stores. Like,
but it's just a gas station.
It's a gas station that has, like, a service garage. And when I lived there, maybe they have more stuff now, but when I lived there, they had like a rack of...
I doubt it with 369 people.
A rack of Little Debbie snacks and like a Coke machine. Not a cooler, but like a vending machine. That was it. Like, we had to get groceries. We had to go like the next town over, which was several miles away. We ended up moving to that town. Anyway, grew up around Wyoming and then came to Utah, and I've been here since the late 90s. I love Utah.
Yeah, his mom really likes small towns.
I love Utah. I love Salt Lake City in particular. That's why I do a fucking podcast about it for 8 years. Let's talk about, I'm going to talk about True Golf. So, True Golf is a golf simulator company. We make software. It's a Utah based company. We make video games basically for golf simulators.
But like professional level, like, golf simulators, not like the Wii.
Yeah, no, the Wii's not really a golf simulator. Golf simulators meaning you're using real clubs, hitting real balls into a screen, basically. We have some other stuff that we dabble in, you know, where you can kind of simulate golf with your phone and a fake club. But
so I know from my standpoint, over the years, I've designed a handful, probably a dozen total golf rooms for people. And yep. Typically what we'll do is we'll put them under the garage. So you do the suspended slab floor over the garage. That way you can have a tent. You know, anywhere between 9 and 10 foot basement, so you've got plenty of room, but you're also enclosed in concrete, so you're not breaking walls and smashing things. Yeah. And so I've done a number of those over
and
the
I can
years.
Almost guarantee you every single one of those uses our software.
to run the simulator. So we've been doing the software for a very long time, over 20 years of simulator software, yeah. Which if you think about it, like that means the early days of simulators is the early 2000s. And we were writing the software then. So we are now writing a new piece of software called E6 Apex is the name of the simulator software. And it's amazing. It's so fucking cool. The visualization on it is unlike anything. Our vision and our goal is to make playing a golf simulator feel like you're on TV. Just like you're watching the Masters or the US Open or whatever. So what do you guys want to know? We got to fill like a bunch of time. So
so your new position here is project management, right? So you're going through and helping them like identify bugs and work through those bugs and meet deadlines or is that just part of the cleanup that you're doing right now?
So the bug thing's not, I mean, it is part of my job, I guess. So I am the senior project manager for True Golf. I manage a bunch of different product lines, but the most important is obviously this new one, Apex. And if you don't know what project management is, it's basically getting people to do shit. That's the best way to put it. Like you
in a timely manner.
Well, so it's basically connecting, what we call stakeholders, which is the leaders of the business, the potential customers, the marketing, the salespeople, producing what they want from a team of developers or operational folks or whatever. So project managers basically create these project plans and roadmaps and paths and keep everyone on track as best as possible. I said today it's like herding cats sometimes.
Or chickens.
I mean, it really is. Like, but really, I mean, there's a lot of communication involved. I love project management. You know, long term, I have other ambitions here, other things that I will probably do with True Golf. But I've been working with them for 2 years. I've been consulting with them privately for 2 years, doing a lot of system admin work, doing a lot of. So what I do in my consulting business, and I don't know that I've talked about this on the air much. I've had a consulting company for, I don't know, 6 or 7 years now, probably.
It's called Joy Division, band.
Joy Division Consulting Corp.
I like that band.
Yeah, they're good. And so the name Joy Division, we'll start there. The name Joy Division, where that came from, is so when I was part of the mobile point of sale company, the startup company that I was a partner in with some other folks, we called our customer service wing the Joy Division. Because we wanted to provide joy to all of our customers. It wasn't enough for us to provide a good service. We wanted to provide them joy. And we kind of had an ethos back then, and really just what drove us was trying to make restaurateurs' dreams come true. Like, not just opening a restaurant and being successful. We wanted to actually know, and we would ask them, what's your actual dream? Like, where do you want to be at the end of your life? Like, do you want to be living on a beach in a tropical island somewhere, sipping drinks? Like, what is your end goal? How do we help you get there type of thing? So we called it the Joy Division. And so, you know, when I needed a name for my company, I still like that. And so my consulting company, what I really focus on is helping businesses fix processes. And so, you know, I've worked, a prime example is Food Truck League.
Yep.
So I think we had them on the show.
Yeah,
But I did some work for Food Truck League, and part of what I did was try to clean up their development process. They were using a firm that was not great, was not producing stuff, and so I had to, you know, I got them on track with another firm, got them moving in the right direction, got them building out some stuff that would transform what they were doing and hopefully get them to a point where they could kind of franchise nationally. And I did some of that work for them for a while. But that's kind of the idea, you know. And True Golf came, this full-time job came from that. Basically, they've been trying to get me to come on full-time for 2 years. And they just finally made me an offer I couldn't refuse to come work for them full-time.
Well, it was good timing because this is the spot in your healthcare life where you'd finally gotten all of their processes cleaned up and realized this is not a full-time job.
Yeah.
And you were kind of talking to me about the fact that I don't know.
Like I'm not needed there.
Yeah. I don't need to be here all the time. I'm, you know, it feels almost like thievery because like I get my stuff done and
there's the, just not, I've just got it humming, you know? So, anyway, so that's, so project management is back to your original question. Project management, I always tell people there's two things to learn in, if you go to college and you don't know, business and project management. And the reason project management's important is it's, I mean, all businesses need it. Mm-hmm. And you can call, it has so many names, product management, project management, product ownership, like all of those different things are project management. If you're an implementation person, you're doing project management. Like, I mean, contractors, general contractors are doing project management.
That's all they do.
That's
basically what they do.
General contractors. Yeah. Well, and the thing that's unique about when Chris usually does project management is it usually has something to do with IT.
Always.
And I don't know how many of you have talked to someone that's not just the customer service person that you call when something doesn't work and they're like, have you turned it on and off again? Not necessarily that person, because that person is going through a script where, you know, if you say X, they say B. If you say Y, they say, you know, C. You know, they're trained to answer certain questions with certain answers. And then Chris is more the person that you get if you actually have a real problem that's not user error or something simple to fix where you, like, there's something super wrong because you have to talk to the IT person. If you've ever talked to a real IT person, like not a Chris person, but like a real IT person, they're really hard to talk to because they're working at this more of a programming level, and the reason that they're in that job is they really, really, really like IT, and they're not really good at human interaction.
It makes me think of, okay, so if you've ever seen Office Space.
Yep.
What the guy's name was, Martin. I can't remember what his name was. He's like a really high strung dude. And basically he was a sort of project manager in a sense, but like when he sits down with the Bobs, you know, the consultants that are like trying to write this company, and basically they're there to decide whose job they're going to get rid of.
And they're like, what do you do?
Yeah. And what do you actually do? And he's like, well, I take the requests from the customers, that they fax in, and I give them to the engineers, and they're like, well, can't the engineers just get them themselves? He's like, the engineers can't talk to the customers. And they're like, well, why not? Do you actually like get the, do you talk to customers directly? Well, no, they fax them in. Okay. Well, do you get the faxes? Well, no, my secretary gets the faxes for me. So what is it that you actually do? And really, I mean, what he probably does is try to communicate.
It's like a translation.
Customer desire into what can actually be done and be able to bridge that gap in communication of like, okay, I know you want these six features in 6 weeks, but realistically, this one's going to take two. This one's going to take four. This one's going to take three. I've got enough to get, you know, there's a pyramid of quality, time, and cost.
And then there's also the translation of someone like me who isn't really into IT going, okay, I really want this to do this, and translating what I'm explaining into something that someone can actually design. Because a lot of times, you know, the way that I describe it isn't necessarily the best way to go about doing it. Or maybe I think that I want this, but the goal that I'm going for is not quite that. And Chris is really good at translating that. So taking the me person that's trying to obtain whatever it is that I want, and I blubber through it the way that I'm trying to explain what he does to you. And then he takes it to the people who do it. And then he uses their language to explain to them what they need to do.
Well,
and then vice versa. If they have questions, he can translate those questions to someone like me to get the additional information, where if I'm talking directly to them, I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about.
And that's really kind of a small part of it. I think the bigger part of project management is using your perceived authority and respect within an organization to convince people to do things for you, and getting people to do stuff. Because, like, okay, so in the real world of technicalities, I'm not anyone's boss, right? In this position as a senior project manager, like, I don't have a team of guys underneath me that are running projects right now. That may be something that happens. Like, I might be in charge of a PMO down the line or something, right? In this instance, like, as a project manager, I have to convince a team of developers and, you know, like, vice president of development, vice president of creative. I have to convince these people to do things for me that I want on a schedule I want purely by being competent, basically, and by helping them feel like they have, like, a real avenue to complete stuff, and, like, they have structure.
A real ownership of the
project. Yeah, and that they have someone that they respect enough to be able to drive that stuff. And that, to me, from a project management standpoint, that's actually probably the most important part, is being able to do that. Because anyone can put together a plan and say, do it, but there's a whole different reality of actually getting it done and making sure it's achieved. And there's a lot that goes into that. But that, to me, that's the bigger part of project management. There's certainly the communication and, like, being able to explain it on a level people understand. But it's that other half where you're trying to get people to do stuff purely out of, like, this nebulous respect that has nothing to do with real authority. Right.
It's kind of like at my work right now, they're trying to get our producers to follow more of a platform. Oh my God, the dog smells so bad. To follow more of a procedure the way that the account managers do. Now, in my particular firm, we don't, like, there's an idea that we have to follow as account managers, but the way that we get there, we don't necessarily have to do it all the same way, and our bosses are okay with that. The problem is our producers don't even have that. Like, they're just off there just doing whatever, whenever, however, and they're dropping the ball on a lot of things. And so my boss is trying to convince them to do it. Well, he's not a salesperson, and all they keep telling him is, well, that's not possible. That's just not how sales work. And he's got a really good point, and most of them really do respect and like him, but for some reason, like, he doesn't have the... That just triggered that with me, Chris, is what, like, he's not technically their boss, right? Mm-hmm. And he has this idea, but he can't get them to do it. So he's trying right now to get some of the senior but younger, so, like, kind of the middle of the road, not the old guys that are phasing out, but some of the guys that are, you know, like, in their mid to late 40s to really get on board with this and be able to convince everybody else, yes, this is the way that we need to do it. And then the younger people will just follow along, because that'll just be the way that it is. But yeah, we need a project manager, babe.
Nah, you need your sales reps to be human that fucking have responsibility. Yeah, so what else? What else do you want to know about TrueGolf?
So what's the target audience? Because it's not a cheap system.
No.
And in any business, you have a target audience. That's that you're designing
for.
Yeah,
like,
for.
You're the residential is your target.
Yeah, that's audience. It's a really good question. Actually, when I first started consulting for TrueGolf and they were offering me a job, the economy was not doing fantastic. You know, it's still not, like, we still have some serious issues. We have really high inflation, you know, a bunch of other stuff, but, you know, that was a concern. Like, I don't know that I can hitch my wagon to this place long term. Knowing that, like, this is not, like, when the economy goes down, discretionary purchases go down as well.
Right.
And these simulators, I mean, I think the cheapest one is like $10,000-ish dollars, but I mean, we do custom simulators that are, you know, $40,000-$50,000 for homes, like the stuff you were talking about, where they have custom rooms built in their home and custom simulators designed to fit in those rooms with really fucking expensive projectors and computers, and they're amazing. Like, the kinds of stuff they can do is great. So the target audience for us is, obviously much more well-off folks, but really pro athletes are a big target. So professional golfers, but even more so, like, football players, baseball players,
all
hockey
the guys
players
that aren't allowed to play sports.
Yeah,
because
basically
they might get injured.
Like all, and not that you can't get injured in golf, but it's such a low impact sport. They're not worried about tearing their fucking meniscus when they're swinging a golf club, right? And so, like, if you think about it, like a professional athlete, they can't ski.
Right.
They're not allowed to do that. They can't go water ski.
They're not even allowed to play the sport that they play professionally in an amateur setting.
They can't do pickup games of basketball if you're a football player.
Right.
You cannot do that because your entire livelihood rides on your body not being fucked up.
Unless you're Michael Jordan.
Well, then you're playing two sports professionally, right? The Deion Sanders, Barry Sanders, yeah, did that as well, right?
You get those tiny handfuls, but generally speaking, no.
Well, and I mean, even then, like, that's probably not the best route to go, but like, they're just fucking superhuman. But like, so that's a big chunk of the target is those professional athletes. Like, we have pro football players that have simulators put in their homes because
they want to do stuff in their off time.
And
they're not allowed to.
And
so
they have a lot of extra income. A lot of people in the finance sector. I mean, if you think about like the people that play golf out there regularly that play a lot of golf, a lot of them have a fair amount of money because tee time's not cheap, right? You can go play at Nibley for, you know, $10 or whatever, and that's actually relatively inexpensive. But generally speaking, people that play a lot of golf at country clubs and stuff like that.
Well,
like,
that, and they're doing it during the week. So, like, if you're just like a regular Joe Blow, like, you're not going to take the day off just to go golf.
My uncle, for example, who worked for NASA for a lot of years and now is a consultant for NASA. He goes golfing.
A lot, yeah.
And his group that he goes golfing with are rocket scientists.
Exactly, yeah.
Are, I think, the mayor of the town, like the chief of police.
Yeah.
Yes, it's a select few people who can go golfing during the day.
Yeah. Yeah. At these, like, I mean, some of these country clubs are obscene how expensive they are. So that's one target audience. There's another target audience. There's obviously resellers out there that we work with. But there are these golf simulator companies. It's like a bowling alley.
Yeah.
We call them clubhouses, but there's a bunch of different names for them. But essentially, it's a building like a bowling alley. It's got 7-10 simulators. There's a lot in strip malls that have like 2 or 3 simulators that you can
it's
go in.
It's kind of like Top Golf, but not hitting the ball out but hitting it in.
They'll have 2 or 3 simulators, like let's say in a strip mall, they'll throw up 2 simulators, 3 simulators, and they'll rent them by the hour to people, just like a bowling alley lane.
So there's one over in that new, off the corridor, isn't there?
I think so, yeah.
I've seen the sign for it, so I think there's a...
Well, and we talked to, who the fuck was it? So we had talked to
the
guys
throwing guy
that had that axe throwing space, yeah. And they were putting in fact, they put in, we talked to them off air about it, but they were putting in a true golf simulator.
Yeah.
And so those are the types of spaces where, you know, that's another place that we actually do a lot of business is in those sort of like, you know, consumer driven, like, hey, come have an experience at our place type of deal.
I wonder if like golf stores would have them.
Potentially what we are seeing them, you know, start to pop up in pro shops,
yeah,
at golf courses.
Pro
yeah.
Shop.
And you know, what we're doing with the software is really giving you some, we're developing some stuff now to give people, you know, the ability to really improve their game. Right. And so we're developing some stuff, the stuff that we released publicly in March, our initial, like practice mode, just to give everyone kind of a taste of the new software. It's a feature we call, you know, bag mapping and gapping basically. And so you can take a club, you basically hit a whole bunch of shots in a simulator with your 4-iron and then your 5-iron and then your 6-iron. And we compile that data for you and show you, like, here's what your grouping looks like. Here's how far you typically hit with your 4-iron versus your 5-iron, which is really valuable information if, you know, you want to go golfing and you're like, well, if I hit my 5-iron at 110 yards and my 4-iron at, you know, 140 yards, you know, this target that's 120 yards out, I probably want to be a little light on my 4-iron. Right. Or I want to smash my 5-iron and hope to overhit what I normally do.
So I would assume, and I mean, I've golfed, but I'm by no means.
I fucking suck at golf.
But I would assume different golf sets, you're going to get different results of. So So a four iron out of set A and a four iron out of set B, you may get different results.
Yeah, potentially, potentially. So there, and there's other things that we're working on doing with clubs, but yeah.
So you could do one round with a particular set of clubs and a different round with a different set of clubs.
Yeah, and even the idea is like, okay, I've got three different four irons.
Right.
Which one do I like the hit with more? Like, let's fire off 20 shots with each of them, and then let's see where those three different groupings are.
So, like, how accurate I am with each and how comfortable I am with each.
What kind of distance I'm getting on them. Am I opening up the club face on one more?
As far as the people that make those, I mean, they go to great lengths to make sure every iron.
Oh, they're super engineered.
Does a specific thing, and so I would assume finding one that fits you, just like a hockey player, there's 1,000 different kinds of hockey sticks. To someone who doesn't play hockey, they all look the same. But they're actually all different weights, different sizes, different shapes.
Angles, yeah.
So to be able to take a different set. And I would see the advantage of a pro shop having that, because then someone could try out a set of golf clubs before they buy it.
Yeah, yeah. And that is something we're working on with pro shops as well. I can't talk about everything we're releasing yet, but that is something we're working on.
So if somebody buys it, be it an individual person or a company.
Or they have access to it somehow.
How often does it update? Is that part of it, or is it?
Yeah, so we have software licensing packages, right? So, you know, we have thousands and thousands of golf courses from all over the world, from Japan to, you know, right here in Salt Lake City. Some courses are pretty heavily licensed, like some of the PGA courses in particular. We have a ton of courses, but you can buy courses specifically, or you can buy licensing packs that give you access to so many things. We update, you know, this is, again, the project that I'm really focused on is new. It's a new piece of software. We just released our first update in March. We're looking to have another one in June. With a wider, more full-bodied game release in September. And one thing to keep in mind is golf simulators use a bunch of different tracking systems, mm-hmm. right? So Garmin makes one that's really popular. There's one called FlightScope. There's one called SkyTrack. There's probably hundreds of freaking simulator applications out there. Trackman, for example, is the one that the PGA actually uses. So when you watch any kind of like professional golf on TV, there's a radar pad sitting behind the golfer that you can't see called a Trackman, and it basically tracks the ball with radar from the time they hit it, and that's kind of how they get the tracer. They're making some of that up right as it goes. That data is somewhat pre-calculated, and then they make adjustments as they grab new chunks of data on the way.
It's
got
to be similar to like hockey and football.
Yeah, very similar to how they do
the real time. You can see the puck or whatnot.
The football, not so much, because it's a much bigger ball. It's a lot easier to track. But like the puck, especially where they're drawing some of the lines now.
It's moving so fast half the time you can't even see. Yeah, so that's why they put the tracer on.
Yeah, very similar idea. So there's a bunch of that different technology that we have to integrate into the game as well. We make our own piece of hardware called Apogee, which is, in my opinion, way better than all these other golf hardwares out there. You know, it is self-contained. It's really easy to service and to manage. Obviously it works with our software. We build off of that first now for this new product. And then we have to get approval and do the integrations for everyone else. But, you know, we do that. We're about to release three more integrations here in the next week or so with some of these folks. So that's hopefully that answers the question for you.
No, that does. So is it set up in a package deal? You're kind of saying you can pay for the course. Is it like a package deal where you get, for example, 20 courses for package A, is it more?
It's really a huge mix, to be quite honest with you, because we've been doing it for so long. Like if you get a simulator through, let's say, Trackman, and they put in a simulator for you, they're going to sell a piece of our software, a version of E6 called Connect, which is an earlier version of software. They may sell Apex as well. But part of that is they're going to give you some base license, and then you can get additional licensing.
Customize.
So you can say, I want to add another 200 golf courses. I want to add this kind of play mode, those sorts of things. It really varies on where you get your simulator and all that, but you're probably going to be talking to us for software. All of it's on our website too, just truegolf.com, and you can find that stuff there.
Does TrueGolf have everything? So if you went to TrueGolf and said, hey, I want to put one of these in my home, they have everything.
Oh, yeah, we've got the whole shebang. So, and we've got everything, again, from, like, really just kind of, like, pre-built, prefabricated out of the box. You take it home. You set up the projector, the tent. You know, we give you instructions, but you set it up yourself in a room and to extremely custom stuff where we send out an install team that, based on the dimensions of your custom room design, like, we have – you know, drafters, essentially. I don't think they're full architects, but we have essentially drafters that will
to lay the whole thing out,
draft the space, custom order all the pieces for it. We manufacture a lot of it. You know, some of it, like turf, we don't manufacture turf.
Right.
But they all have turf. And so we'll drop ship turf to the location to be there at the time. So all of that stuff that
someone could come to you and say, this is what I want. Tell me when it's done and you'll do everything.
Yep. Yeah, soup to nuts. We can do the full white glove install package, everything for them. Obviously, like, that stuff costs money, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like, it costs money for us to send a couple guys out to actually build stuff out for you.
But. So the last one that I did was in one of my parade homes about 5-6 years ago. But for that, that's what they did. They I don't know who they used at the time, but they were like...
Probably True Golf.
They were like, you know what? Here's our budget, whatever that was. Here's the space. We want all of this. We want it surround sound. We want the lighting. We want everything.
Yeah. It's freaking cool, man. It is really immersive. It blew my mind the first time I played on one of these.
So I haven't played it, but I've seen them installed in some of my homes, and I've seen them, like, all set up and everything. They're freaking amazing. I mean, it's as close as you can be to being there without actually being there.
You know, you need to talk him into doing, like, scents. Grass, freshly cut grass. Like, and every once in a while,
like Disneyland, you get a waft of oranges.
Every once in a while, just a little, you know, waft of a honeysuckle or whatever.
Put on
a
fan system so the air moves.
The cool thing is we've done some stuff. So we have a product within the E6 line called Multisport that you can get. And basically it turns your simulator into, sorry, I had to sneeze there. It turns your simulator into a multi-sport simulator. So instead of playing golf, you can play like fucking disc golf, like frisbee golf, you know?
Oh, yeah.
You can play football. You can do like field hockey. I don't know if we have regular hockey pucks flying in the screen. I'll have to find out. That's a good question. But
I've seen the baseball ones, like where it has the ball thrower. And you hit it. Similar and same idea. Thing, it tracks where you're hitting.
Yeah, similar idea. So, like, we can do, like, with like, the football version of multi-sport, I know there's, like, challenges built into it where, like, you know, you're throwing the football at the screen trying to hit targets. And it's, you know, the target is 40 yards out. The screen's 10 yards in front of you at most. But the target's 40 yards out, and we're actually tracking based on how you throw that ball and where that ball's thrown, its spin, you know,
if
all
it would
that.
Actually hit or not.
Yeah. How hard it hits the net.
The impact of the ball on the screen means basically nothing. The screen is actually literally just stopping whatever projectile you're hucking at it from, you know, breaking other stuff. The reality is, like, a lot of the stuff that we're – every tracking system's a little different. Like I said, like the TrueTrack – not TrueTrack, the Garmin system, the Trackman system, mm-hmm. It's like a freaking radar plate, right? And it's tracking via radar how that thing's flying. You know, we use some different stuff. We're actually looking at – we have cameras that shine from our Apogee system that shine right down on where you're hitting. And so one of the cool things that we can do with our system that we can't do with, like, Trackman, we can replay. So immediately following your shot – or whatever you're doing, but immediately following your shot, essentially in golf, you can actually see that club coming in up against the ball. You can see how it's hitting the ball. So, like, if you've ever played golf and you're, even if you're out on the driving range, right, and you're hitting the ball, when you're watching it, like, it's all so fast when it actually makes contact, it's really tough to gauge and to understand. You opened up your club face or you closed your club face. Like, as you came around, you turned that club face into the ball, and that's why it went the direction it did. Mm-hmm. Or your club was too high and it, what we call, topped the ball, which is why it only went at, you know, 10 yards forward. You can see all of that on the camera on the replay. And so you can actually see, like, oh, like, I'm opening my face a little too much. I need to correct that part of my swing. Immediate feedback that we're able to provide. It's really cool.
That's,
like,
really cool.
In the world of, like, improving your golf game, like, that, to me, nothing can replace an instructor
for a lot of stuff.
Sure.
But an instructor with this tool, being able to like look at it and go, hey, look, and just show you exactly like, see how that club kind of turned open a little too much? That's why you had that big slice.
Well, I think an instructor with that tells you how to correct it, right? Because like, I can get it and I can hit it and I see, well, that's not right. Well, someone, but then like, well, how do I fix it?
And I can have a guy tell me, well, you opened up the club too much. You need to rotate your hand this way instead of this way. But when you actually see the club open up, like you really kind of understand like, oh, because we're talking about these small angles hitting these balls and it makes a huge impact on the long trajectory. So
that's really cool. Yeah. I could see where a golf instructor could really benefit from that. I mean, very expensive, but if you're that level of a golf instructor and you're charging $200-$300 an hour for lessons, I can see where you would take someone out, play some real rounds of golf, bring them back to that simulator and say, okay, we're having issues with this. I want you to hit 10 balls this way and set it up towards the same hole that they were struggling with. Take that, put it in, and then help them correct it.
Yeah, well, and guess what? In Salt Lake in December, you can't play golf.
Yeah.
But you can improve your game if you got a simulator and you're able to see that feedback.
Well, if it's a course you play regularly, like I could see where that would be very beneficial.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we're not all going to play Pebble Beach, but we're all going to play.
Could play Pebble Beach.
We could all play Nibley or Meadowbrook or whatever.
Yeah, because those are local to us and that's realistic. So if that's on your list.
And it's a Utah company, which is really, really nice.
Yeah, that's got huge benefit.
Based out of Centerville. We manufacture here in Utah a lot of stuff. We produce the games here, obviously. And we hire. In fact, I'm looking for some senior Unreal developers right now.
So if you're listening to the show.
If you're an Unreal Engine developer and somehow listen to this show.
And have made it this far.
and you've got a fair amount of experience, let me know. Send me a message. I'm actually kind of serious about that. We're looking for some more guys. So we're building out a little bit bigger team here. So. Anyway, okay, well, hopefully that wasn't too boring for people. It is something in Utah. It's something that we do and, in a pinch with 10 minutes notice, I think.
No, that's very interesting. I find that stuff very interesting.
It's cool as hell, I think. So that's, I mean, that's part of why I moved over to the company. I just think it's so freaking cool. And understanding like the people, you know, the clientele that we have at times and stuff. So
can you talk about anybody that like, endorses you?
Unclear. Okay. I don't know from a marketing standpoint, like who we have agreements with, who we don't. So I can't really say. I don't want to get in trouble for saying.
Sorry,
names.
You can't say Thurl Bailey has one.
Yeah, I couldn't.
Can't say that.
I don't know who that is. Throm Sturman. Strom Thurmond. He's dead, by the way. The old fucker from Congress that died in office. One of many. Anyway. Yeah.
Because you don't retire from Congress, you just die.
Well, I think that's the way it works.
So our Congress is.
Dance like everyone else can go fuck themselves.
There you go, see?
We cut ourselves off from joy far too often because we worry what other people will think of us. Take a moment today to look around and silently tell everyone to go fuck themselves. Then dance. I missed these affirmations last week, so I like that one.
That's
that
a good one.
Yeah, dance like everyone else can go fuck themselves.
That is a good one.
That's kind of how I live life a lot of times. So very good advice. Join our Patreon. Maybe you can contribute to shit like this when, you know, sometimes we'll ask questions and get, you know, we ask some questions to the folks at Caputo's from our Patreon. Yep. Members. So patreon.com/TNUP for the new Utah podcast.
And maybe once things slow down, we can start doing some more fun things. We did once have a camera in here. And
yeah. I mean, that's kind of the intent long term is to start producing some of that content. You can name one of the Jersey Giants.
That's right.
I want to name one.
Big Bertha to go along with Birth Defect Bertha. Yeah. What if I named one Brenda? Would you be pissed?
No.
If I donated the money to do that? If I paid for the Patreon money for that?
No.
I paid myself.
Not my name.
Is that both a business expense and then also a revenue?
I think so.
I'm not I'm sure that works. Like,
just cancels it out. You just don't report
just
it at all.
Ask my tax guy. Follow us on social media at TNU Podcast. And you can go to our website, thenewutah.com, if you want. But follow us on social media. Instagram is a pretty good way to get a hold of us. Facebook, you know, send us a message on Facebook, because I think, like, the, you know, one out of every 20 is a person, and the rest of them are fucking stupid Facebook bots that are trying to, like, scam you.
Insta's probably the best place, because Jeremy monitors that, and he sends it right over to me. Talks to you, sees how serious you are about it, and then gets it over to me, and then I reach out to you and get you scheduled.
Instagram's really cultivated a great community, I think, of local businesses and artists and artists.
Unfortunately, the X is pretty much dead.
Yeah. For that kind of stuff.
Elon
Musk killed it.
At one point, it was our main source.
That's not really Musk's fault.
I know.
He opened his mouth like a dumbass.
But
and
did you
had
hear what happened with all the Tesla crap?
Well, yeah. I mean, there's he's such a big public figure that being in charge of these different companies does create issues from a financial standpoint.
3 a.m. they sent out an email to one of the Tesla manufacturing plants, or multiple ones, I'm not sure, saying that they didn't have jobs anymore, and people showed up Monday. So they sent it out Sunday night, I guess Monday morning at 3 a.m. and they showed up and, like, their pass cards didn't work, or people went to log in that worked remotely and their passwords didn't work.
That's what it did to most of the Twitter people when it took over Twitter.
That's not exactly how it worked, but that happens in big business. It's not just a Tesla thing.
That's insane. Have you seen all the trouble with his new electronic trucks or whatever?
Yeah, I don't really care. I'm never going to buy one of those. They're ugly as shit.
Oh, for sure. They're like getting stuck and like crashing into things.
That's because people are doing dumbass shit with them, right? Like, oh, I got this new fucking truck. I'm going to go mudding in my fucking electric truck
wheels. One guy, like, the pedal didn't stay on and it got, like, stuck. Like, the tread slid up on the gas pedal and got stuck under a piece of the molding while he was driving. And luckily, like, he was able to knock it out, but he couldn't get his gas pedal.
I will say, though, no recall yet for that. However, Sean's car has a recall for spontaneously lighting on fire in a garage.
But no solution.
Yeah, no solution for that one. But
she's not allowed to park in our garage.
I mean, I want to talk about this for a second, and then we'll just end the show like this probably. But that's the difference, right? So Tesla, because Elon Musk is Elon Musk, and he's basically like the most giant dick on Twitter there is, which I find kind of amusing, to be honest. But he's also, like, he's paid the fucking price for that, right? Like, the reason he had to buy Twitter is because he opened his fucking mouth and the SEC basically said, no, you have to fight that. You can't say that kind of shit. You can't have that much money and say that kind of shit publicly, because it affects the stock market in such a massive way. Like, you have to fucking be serious. And the board had to take him seriously. And that's how he ended up paying way too much for a company that was not doing great.
Right.
Right? Like, it was a big fucking sham. But because of Elon being who he is in the terms of, like, the ethosphere, and everyone knows who he is. And I don't like Jeff Bezos at all. I think he's a fucking piece of shit. But one thing Bezos has going for him is he doesn't fucking hang out in the public spotlight saying all kinds of shit to all kinds of people all the time. Because Elon does that, you hear stuff about, you know, the 1 in 20,000 trucks that has this weird issue that doesn't even warrant a recall yet or a full investigation from, like, the National Transportation Safety Board, versus, you know, Sean's Hyundai has some fucking recall that they haven't been able to fix yet, where I think it's the braking system or
it's like the brake lights or something.
Can just out of fucking nowhere, while the car is parked and off in your garage, light on fire. And so their recommendation in the meantime is,
don't park in the garage.
Don't park in your garage. Park your car outside in the driveway or on the street. And we'll fix it when we figure out how. Like, that's fucking crazy. But, like, that doesn't make national news. What makes national news is some fucking dude.
I think that
dies
car,
in a truck.
The truck is ugly.
Oh, it's so ugly. That electronic truck is hideous.
I saw one the other day. I was driving somewhere and I saw one and I was like, oh my God, it's real.
They're so
ugly. Because there was still a little part of me that's like, this has got to be
They look like from the movie Tron.
Yeah, there was a little part of me that thought, this has got, like, somebody's, like, putting these into videos. Like, they're not real.
What are we calling this show? Because I really have no fucking idea.
I really have, we should name it, I really have no effing idea.
Okay, that's it. Thanks, folks.